This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Finding Your Bliss with host Judy Liebrack, heard every Saturday at 1 p.m. on Zoomer Radio.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Finding Your Bliss, the show that helps you find and follow your bliss. I'm Judy Liebrack, and today I'm joined by a very prolific and beautiful author, Monique Gray Smith, whose latest book, Sharing the Light, I think should be mandatory reading for all 5-year-olds to 105-year-olds. I do. And before we meet her, let me tell you a little bit more about her. So Monique Gray Smith is an award-winning best-selling author and sought-after consultant. Monique is Cree and Scottish and has been sober and involved in her healing journey for over 34 years. She's very well known for her storytelling, spirit of generosity, and focus on resilience. She has written 12 books for people of all ages, ranging from children to adults, and her books are used really to share wisdom and knowledge, hope, a big part of this book, and ultimately the important teaching that love is medicine. Her book, Sharing the Light, Stories and Reflections, is filled with uplifting stories, vignettes, and reflections to inspire sort of the five important things in the book, which are gratitude, love, joy, and hope in navigating life in a changing and challenging world through the lens of five transformative practices: gratitude, love, joy, happiness, and hope. Best-selling author Monique Gray Smith weaves together short stories, poignant reflections, and thoughtful questions. The questions are fantastic throughout, that invite readers to pause and reconnect with their inner light. As an Indigenous author, Monique brings her cultural wisdom and unique perspective to each reflection. This beautiful and welcoming book can be read cover to cover or used as a daily source of guidance and support, offering gentle wisdom that inspires and empowers. This belongs on your nightside table, your bedside table, to be read at night, in the morning, when you start your day, anytime, many times. Sharing the Light, Stories and Reflections is a powerful reminder that when we embrace our light and share it with the world, that energy not only transforms us, but ripples out to uplift everyone around us. Monique Gray Smith, congratulations on your latest book, Sharing the Light, and welcome to Finding Your Bliss.
What a privilege to be sitting with you, Judy. Thank you for the gift of being a guest on Finding Your Bliss.
Thank you. Monique, I love that when you write that on your desk, you have a small white frame, and on the pink paper inside that frame are these three words: yes, not yet, we have something even better in mind for you. And you say that these three responses are your guidance, your touchstone, and they help you remember that you're being guided for and cared for by your ancestors. Can you say more about these brilliant three responses? Because a lot of people get really stuck with the not yet.
Right. Not yet is, you know, definitely a patience builder. But I think it's bigger than that. It's like, not yet, we're building something even more exciting for you. Or that the gifts that you've been blessed with have to be cultivated a bit more for the gift of what you're asking for to come to fruition. So for me, those three pieces: yes, it's happening, not yet, all right, or we've got even something better in mind for you or in store for you, is just, it helps me get out of my own way of trying to figure out, why is something not happening? Why didn't that happen? Or why isn't that happening yet?
Yes.
It kind of allows me to move my ego out of the way. And no matter how we as humans try, our ego does show up. And so the less it can show up, the better, but it helps that ego move out of the way and me have faith that I'm still doing my work, right? I'm still making things happen. It's not like I'm just sitting back waiting, but it's having faith that me doing my work and those who we may or may not be able to see on the other side are also doing their work.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Beautiful. And I love not yet because it's so hopeful. It's not a no. It's not yet.
Yeah. which is a reminder. It's like, okay, there's a comfort in not having to rush things because we're this grind culture where we want things right away. And it's like, slow down. You actually aren't quite ready yet for the beauty that we're sending.
Wow. That's so lovely. Tawel means welcome in Cree, but it means a lot more than that. Can you speak to how it means that there's always room? And in your case, you're talking about sharing the light and making sure there's always room in our hearts, minds, and spirits to create, share, and receive light. Can you say more about that?
Mm-hmm. I love that word, Tawel, right? It's like, come on into my house, but it's also like, I welcome you into my heart, into my spirit. And in that, our combined light really makes a magnificent light for those who might not yet see or feel their light, for those who are in darkness, right? And I think an important thing to remember is that in times of darkness, like my family has just gone through a couple years of very difficult times. Had this book even come out 3 months ago, Judy, it would be very difficult for me to talk about this because of the darkness we were in. And when we're in that darkness, to rush it is, I'm looking for the words, to rush it is to not kind of envelop the gift of the darkness. We've been kind of taught to just move through the darkness, get to the light. But in that darkness, we cultivate a brighter light. In the darkness, we're more appreciative of the light. We're more appreciative of the lightness. So when I think about Tawel, it's like there's always room in the circle. In the book, I also talk about the full moon and the cycles of the moon, and that sometimes in the darkness, we're just like that first day of the crescent moon, barely visible, but there's still light. And when we look at the crescent moon, when we look at the moon just before, like at dusk, and it's only crescent, when you really look, you can still see the fullness of the moon, right? It's like us as humans, even in our crescent, there is still a fullness of us. It will take time.
There's a glimmer.
There's a glimmer. And it takes time for that magnificence. So in that welcoming, it's welcoming everybody in whatever space they're in to be a light, to share their light, to not dim our lights, and also sometimes to protect our light, right? Sometimes there's people and circumstances that are not good for us to be around, whether it's only for a period of time in our life or maybe longer.
Yes, absolutely. It's so simple and beautiful, this book, because you talk about the five ways of being, and each chapter focuses on one of these ways: gratitude, love, joy, happiness, and hope. But you say all things begin with gratitude, and it's so true. And I can't wait to get to the laundromat story and finding the coins at the bottom of the dryer and how in the most, we're going to get to that. I'm teasing it just because it's such a poignant story in the book. But can we just talk about gratitude, and can you elaborate on how everything good does begin with thank you and with gratitude?
Mm-hmm. For me, it's something I learned, you know, when I was in treatment at a beautiful place called Round Lake Treatment Center. I was there about 34 years ago. And that teaching of gratitude got built on what my mom had taught us about how important gratitude and being thankful is. It is like a medicine that sometimes even in my darkness, if I have a day where I don't start before my feet even hit the floor, to think about a minimum of three aspects of my life I'm grateful for, that whole day is a little bit off. It's a little discombobulated. And I'm like, what's going on? I didn't start with gratitude, because gratitude also changes our neurobiology, right? It begins to release dopamine, and not the kind of dopamine of a flush from our phone, right? But a beautiful dopamine.
Right.
And it releases serotonin that sets us up for long time, lifelong happiness. So gratitude is a form of medicine. And even just the pieces of saying thank you before we eat, thank you for the water we get to drink, right? All these pieces change our neurobiology so that we can walk in the world in a different way.
Yes. And by flexing that muscle and practicing this, you just get better and better at finding those things, right?
Totally.
And seeing them, seeing the good. There's just so many truisms and sacred advice in this book. I love when you say, this really resonated with me in a big way. Go where you are appreciated, not where you are tolerated. Mm. My God, that's a powerful, powerful statement. Can you speak to that and what that means for you?
I think there have been times in my life when I've gone where I've been tolerated. either by my ideas, my voice, who I am, and it doesn't feel good. And then when it doesn't feel good, I just want to shrink, right, and not share my light. And when I'm in places where I'm appreciated, I feel like I show up, right?
And in that,
I think we make space for others to show up. And then the light just gets brighter and it reverberates out. So I think, you know, the more places where we feel appreciated, again, it's not about our ego, right? But it's about, and I know I'm going to keep using this word because it's a concept that I think we don't talk enough about, is that these ways of having medicine in our lives, and not the prescribed medicine, but how we are and how we are with each other, can be medicine or not.
Absolutely. Another thing you talk about, and I say this all the time, so I loved reading about this. One of my favorite phrases is, every rejection is God's protection and redirection. And you talk about how rejection is always protection and how we must embrace and be grateful even for adversity, right? Another wonderful part of the book is that all throughout there are these reflections. And one of them is to take a moment to reflect upon a time when you really wanted something to happen and it didn't. And how in hindsight, you see that actually you really were being protected and taken care of. And it's so true. We just have to trust the universe to unfold as it should and believe that. How does gratitude relate to all of that?
I think one of the things I learned from my mom, as you read the book, you see how much I learned from my mom, right?
But yes,
that she did not have an easy life. And yet gratitude and joy were things that were prevalent in her life all the time. She had like an innate discipline to cultivate and pay attention to both gratitude and joy. And I think sometimes that's a word, right? We have to pay attention to both gratitude and joy.
Yes. And okay, I can't hold off on telling the story, even though we're not there yet, but the story of how you were going through a very difficult period and you didn't have a home as a family. Mm-hmm. And you would go to the, and you were living on a beach, and you would go to this laundromat, and inevitably there would be coins at the bottom of that dryer. And just the whole joy of doing the laundry and that it was light enough that you could actually carry it to the laundromat. And it was an activity that you could all do as a family. And there was joy in all of this and gratitude in all of this. And you took those coins and were able to go as a family next door to the Dairy Queen and all of you have an ice cream after it. And just, but this was your mother. My goodness. She just found the good. She found the good.
She did.
Do you remember that?
Oh, I remember totally. We were living in Nelson and we'd have to haul our black garbage bags across that big orange bridge and get to the laundromat. And my mom also, she didn't rush life. Like as soon as we got in that laundromat and it was hot in the summer, we'd sit down and the cool chairs would be like the first, the first exhale of joy. And then we'd put the stuff in the washing machine. And when we were done, we'd unravel it and lift it up. And down in that little bottom there was often coins. And sometimes, for sure, we'd always have enough for ice cream, but sometimes even more. And that was another joy that kind of got us through the week until we were able to do laundry again. And I know it sounds so weird that doing laundry was a form of joy, but it was how my mom cultivated our lives.
Wow. How she reframed it. She reframed it into something joyful and a beautiful family activity. And it's really incredible. I also just want to reiterate that the saying, what you're thankful for three times a day, what you're grateful for at bedtime, for three things that happened during the day, and how when you focus on this gratitude, it just multiplies, right? And I also love that you ask the question in the book to all the readers, what was the best part of your day? What a great question. And you and your wife would talk about this with your children, so they would say aloud what that thing was. But that also gave you, and I love this, as a parent, a clue into what was bringing your child and children, in your case, joy and happiness. And I love this story because it reminded me of my late grandmother asking me to say my prayers aloud. And when I would ask her, why do I need to say them aloud, Grandma? She'd say, oh, I just want to make sure you're doing it right. But really, she wanted to see, right, what I was praying for, right, to hear what I was praying for. Can you speak more to the blessing of asking your children what was the best part of your day and yourself?
Well, my mom used to ask that, when she tucked my sister and I in. And she called both of us chum. So she'd say, what was the best part of your day, chum? But somehow she knew not to ask us, how was your day, especially at tuck-in, right? Because if we hadn't had a good day, and she asked us a tuck-in, how was your day? Our brain goes to all the not good things. And then our cortisol, that stress hormone, goes up, and we don't sleep well. And then the next day we're sleep deprived, which increases our vulnerability again. Yes. So that question, what was the best part of your day, elicits all the good things that happened. And even if you have had a lousy day, there's usually one thing that you can find that was the best part of your day. And it just kind of softens the transition to sleep. But also, as you said so beautifully, it helps us as parents or grandparents or aunties or uncles to understand what brings the children who we love, what brings them happiness and joy, so we can have more of those experiences for them.
Absolutely. I love that you mentioned, it's so huge and lovely, taking a moment to offer gratitude to the teachers who have come through our lives, to give gratitude to them. You suggest writing a letter or a text, email, FaceTime to some of these teachers to tell them how you feel about them and how thankful you are to have them in your life. Can you speak to this? Because I think that must land in such a deep place, not only for them to hear it, but for you to say it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you for noting that, Judy, that gratitude is reciprocal, right? Like when we put out that gratitude, we also feel good. It's the same with kindness, right? Like the research shows that when I'm kind, the same things that happen in my brain and being kind also happen when I receive kindness and when I witness an act of kindness. So when I offer my gratitude, it is a reciprocal relationship with that beautiful emotion. And I know even if I might not get to see the person, especially if we send something in the mail, because today we get so few things in the mail, but if somebody gets a letter in the mail, I know at some point that mail's going to arrive and they're just going to go, oh, I needed this today.
Absolutely.
Right? Trusting that that little letter is going to arrive on just the right day. And, you know, I have a little stack that I keep. And on days that there's a lot of darkness, I pull those letters out and I read them.
Wow.
From people who have sent love my way.
You know, you talk about the angels who crossed your path. And I couldn't help but think what an angel you are, you know, and how you've come into our path with this beautiful book, Sharing the Light. But I wanted to ask you about the angels who've crossed your path and helped you in times of need. I love the story of Isidro Camacho and how he was truly an angel who shared his life and helped you survive. Can you tell us more about Isidro and your time in the Dominican Republic when you really were without a home and how he was your angel?
Yeah, my friend Kelly Mongezeb and I were traveling. We were high school friends and then roommates in college. And when I finished nursing school, we went on this trip to 3 weeks to Grand Cayman, slept on our friend's porch. And then we went to the Dominican Republic. And we knew, like, what we were doing there, I don't know. This was 1990. For example, when we were in Punta Cana, they were building their very first hotel. So it wasn't really yet a destination other than Puerto Plata, which is where we landed. And this friend of ours, when we were planning, had gone to the Dominican Republic and had said to us, when you're on the Malecon, if you ever run into this guy named Isidro Camacho, say hi to him for me. He'll remember me as Bill. And I wrote it in my book, right? I'm always writing in my book. And so we get there, and the next morning we need to go change money, and we know no English. And the front desk says, go to the Malecon, follow it, and you'll come to the bank. And then about, you know, maybe 10 minutes along the road, along the Malecon, this gentleman comes up to us and starts to visit with us and helps us to change money on the market and helps us find a place to live. And we do some trips with him and a friend named Alejandro. And then one day we're somewhere in this little community, kind of like pub restaurant, and he introduces himself as Isidro Camacho. And I'm like, it starts to ring a bell, right? Isidro Camacho, Isidro Camacho. So when we get back to where we were staying, I open my book and I'm like, oh my gosh. And so Kelly was as much shock as I was. And he was even in more shock, right? But I love that because I don't think we would have stayed in that country had we not met him, because we didn't know any Spanish. It was almost disrespectful of us to have been traveling like that. He taught us Spanish. He found places to live. He really was an angel that crossed our path, for sure.
Wow.
The first person we meet besides the hotel staff.
Isn't that incredible? That's your ancestor. See, that's your ancestors looking out for you, right? Right? Let's go back to that, because that there's no internet, there's no iPhone, there's no phones, there's, you know, nothing. And so that was, I can't imagine your poor mom.
Oh my gosh. I always think about those situations, Judy. I'm like, what had to have happened on the other side for all those things to line up for us to meet him at that exact moment, right?
Yeah. Yes.
And when you mentioned my mom, like, because I have a lot of cousins and I was the first one to travel like this. And when my mom dropped me off at my friend Kelly's place, my mom had a little Ford Ranger at the time. My backpack was in the back of the truck. We pull up in front of my friend Kelly's house and she doesn't even put the truck in park. She just kind of slows right down. She reaches across me, undoes the door, opens the door and kind of gives me a little push. And I'm like, I looked at her like, what are you doing? And she's like, you got to go. I'm like, are you not getting out? She's like, no. She just gave me a little push.
Wow. Go.
I grabbed my backpack and she reached back, closed the door and drove off. As a parent now, I get it. Right?
Yes.
Like the fear, the joy for her for seeing me live my dream of wanting to travel, but the fear, like I cannot even imagine, Judy. Yeah.
Yeah. Crazy, crazy. And I know this as a parent, and you know this as a parent now, right?
Yeah.
So she was so smart because she was self-protective, but she was also empowering you. Just go. Mm-hmm. You can do it. Yeah. There's the little push you need. You're going to be fine. Yeah. As opposed to lingering in it, right?
Not so much. I don't know about me.
Yeah, totally, totally. What a beautiful example of how your mom protected you, but trusted you enough to let you go. That's incredible. We're going to go on a short commercial break. When we come back, more with Monique Gray Smith and how the words we choose can carry light, intention, and even shape what comes right back to us. We'll be right back in a moment.
Finding Your Bliss is brought to you by CREATE, Canada's leading fertility center for over 25 years.
CREATE is here for anyone struggling with infertility or in need of assisted reproductive technology to have children. CREATE is about cutting-edge science from highly skilled doctors. In unprecedented times like these, CREATE is about ensuring the safety of all patients and staff. CREATE has made important changes to protect you by ensuring social distancing, wearing masks, as well as screening before entering. So what about the bundle of joy that you've been hoping would come into your family? CREATE Fertility Center is here for you. Visit createivf.com to keep up with the latest changes and learn about CREATE Fertility Center's comprehensive care for every fertility journey. Keep safe and healthy during these challenging days, remembering that life is about moments that we create together.
Hi, everyone. We're back, and this is Finding Your Bliss on Zoomer Radio AM 740. And I'm talking to Monique Gray Smith, best-selling author of Sharing the Light, Stories and Reflections. Before the break, Monique, you shared a beautiful story about your mom and how she courageously let you venture off for the first time with the kind of love that says, I trust you to find your way. And it makes me think so much about the power of words. You say, Monique, that the words you speak weave, and I say like weaving, W-E-A-V-E, the life you live. And so many people speak negatively and not with gratitude or hopeful energy. Why are the words we speak so important? And how does the universe respond in kind to those words that we say out loud and how we say them?
Because I think our words can be light, right? And when we have more light around us and within us, it begins to build a momentum and an energy to attract opportunities, experiences, people that allow those words that we've been saying to cultivate if they're in our highest good, right? Like if I wanted to say, you know, I want to be a New York Yankees player and bat after Aaron Judge. That's not going to happen because I'm a 57-year-old woman and that's just not a reality in this world, right? Although there might be some opportunity to do that at some time, but in the lineup, no. So they have to be things that are somewhat potentially possible. But when we speak them out loud and we cultivate, and even more importantly, when we speak them for other people, like, for example, for me, one of the angels in my life was a woman at the University of Victoria. I was 22. I was working at a hospital in Kamloops. I'm trained as a psychiatric nurse. Came down for my interview. And when I left that room, she said to me, I look forward to reading your book one day. And I didn't think she was talking to me. Like, I was 6 months sober. I didn't graduate from high school, even though I went back to get my grade 12. I had a lot of self-limiting beliefs. So I kept opening that door, and she said, "Wait, Monique, I'm talking to you. I look forward to reading your book one day." Well, Judy, wow. I got out of that room as fast as I could, got to my car, had a little 1976 bright yellow Toyota Corolla. My heart was pounding, I had goosebumps, because that was the first seed, right, to possibly be a writer. Wow. And it took me 20 years for my first book to come out, and all kinds of experiences along the way with the same message. But I think when we speak our future, right, and our dreams with people who are safe, or write them, yes, or in our prayers, and sometimes people will also speak our future. And when people do that, all kinds of magic happens. Like, I could tell you all the things that happened in those 20 years that you'd be like, wow, right? Incredible things to get to the place to release my first book.
I love this story because I'm a life coach, and people will tell me their dreams and their wishes, and I put them on a glass bookshelf and I never forget them. So even when they've forgotten them, I look at you and I remember up on that second shelf from the top, that's your dream, and I never forget it.
Yeah.
And this angel actually said words that you might not even have uttered. She saw it. What a beautiful human to have done that, because she helped you manifest it. Little did she know, and I hope she did know some of it, that you would write 12 books. My goodness.
Right? Yeah. She was in her last week on faculty at the School of Social Work doing those interviews. So I've never been able to find her. Yeah. She was about to retire. So for me, like, what a gift, right?
What a gift. She knows somewhere in the, right? She knows. She does. You know, before we did this interview, Monique, I was almost going to call you and say, do we go ahead and do this interview today? Because I was sensitive to where you come from, BC. And I thought to myself, even during those days when love and joy and happiness or hope seem out of reach or even impossible, you suggest that we still begin with gratitude and with hope and all these good things. How is this possible on a day like today when this terrible tragedy just happened in Tumbler Ridge, BC, this horrific mass shooting, one of the worst in Canadian history, nine people were killed, 24 more injured. How do we find lightness in the dark here? I was really thinking about you because you're from that part of the world.
Yeah, and we talked about this before you came on, just that moment to be kind of soft with the energy and to send lots of light to Tumbler Ridge, to those families, to the school, to that community, to the frontline workers, to everybody who's there right now, to help process what has happened and help to heal. I think those people can bring light, but it's going to be a while before that community can be in light again. Because it's sort of like what we were saying at the beginning, Judy, to just move quickly to light after something so horrific has happened. And to think about the young person who acted in this way, what must have been happening for them to have that compassion for them also to do this? They must have been living a horrific experience. So we don't want to rush to the light right away, because it'll be, I think, almost disrespectful. But what we can do is send love. We can send prayers. Yeah. We can send thoughts. At some point, it'll come available to us to know what else we can do as citizens living in this beautiful country we live in. But until then, I think those are the gifts we can offer, is our love, our thoughts, our prayers, our good feelings.
Our prayers, You know, we're recording this interview a few days before Valentine's Day, a day where we're asked to put love in our hearts for everyone. I mean, we should always put love in our hearts every day. But a huge section of your book is all about love and how important it is to let love light the way. And I thought to myself, and help us understand, if people lived with love in their hearts, could something like this have been avoided, do you believe?
I do. In Sharing the Light, I have a short passage from my original book called Tilly, A Story of Hope and Resilience, published by Sonarness Press. And it's a piece where Tilly, who's 12, calls her grandma, who she's named after, and is talking about something that's happening for her at school that doesn't feel very good. And her grandma says to her, "What you got to remember, Tilly, is that everyone's born with love in their hearts. Sometimes life takes that away, but we're all born with it." And then she says, so whenever you enter a room, in your imagination, fill it with love and make enough room for everyone else to fill that room with love too. She said, that, my girl, is when good things happen. And so, you know, if we make that bridge with what's happened in Tumblr Ridge, we can do that as a country. We can send love there and we can send love to all the families. So I think, you know, as you had said at the beginning, that love is a form of medicine, and it's a medicine that, yes, Tumblr Ridge needs, that we need as a country. But here we are recording on a day where in our world, we also need love as a lot of medicine.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. There's a gorgeous chapter in the book where you talk about what it is to be a cookie person. First of all, even that phrase is so great. Can you talk about what's involved in being a cookie person? And before you do, I'm just going to say your Auntie Ellen was a cookie person. Mm-hmm. There's a beautiful story of humanity in the book where she helped a woman named Bonnie. She gave the boots off her feet. She gave your jacket, and jackets weren't so plentiful, winter jackets, because she knew that Bonnie was in the greatest need. And you've said that it was one of the most beautiful acts of humanity you had ever witnessed. Following in her footsteps, you even applied to psychiatric nursing school because you were inspired by your Auntie Ellen. And also, I love the fact that she never spoke about it. It was just a quiet thing that she did because it was the right thing to do. My God, that was so powerful. Can you say more about Auntie Ellen and about all of this and what's involved in being a cookie person? Who are cookie people? How can you reach out to the cookie people in your life? More about being a cookie person.
Yeah, cookie people are those people who come into our lives, sometimes for most of our life, like my Auntie Ellen, or sometimes just a moment like that woman I was just talking about at UVic, right? Cookie people see us, they love us, they care for us, they uphold us, they see the gifts we've been blessed with, they treat us with dignity and respect. It doesn't mean they always like our behaviors, right? But they never shame us in trying to correct those behaviors. Yes, so my Auntie Ellen was one of those people for sure. Bonnie was, you know, my auntie worked as a psychiatric nurse in Kamloops with the homeless population, the street entrenched people with addictions. And Bonnie was, as we would say today, a client. But my auntie never said that. She just loved her and cared for her like family. So my Auntie Ellen was one. But we also had a neighbor when I was five named Mrs. Gladish. And she used to... through our fence, there was a gate, and she would come through the gate. Somehow she always knew when there was things happening in our house that weren't gentle. And she'd come through that gate with a plate full of warm cookies. And she'd knock on the door, and whoever was there would let her in. And she'd sit at the table, and everybody would come and eat our cookies. And by the time the plate was empty and it was time for Mrs. Gladish to leave, we all felt way better. Because... she just brought love into the space and just kind of took away the fractures that were happening through by her love. So she was a cookie person. I think that we can reach out to our cookie people, call them, write them, send a card, FaceTime, video, go visit. Please don't text them. Like, take a little more time, right? Just share your gratitude for them. Because they're people who change our trajectories, right? Because what happens, I think, Judy, is... when cookie people come into our lives, they change our feelings. And often they change our feelings about ourselves. And when our when our feelings change, our destiny changes. That's why these five ways of being are so important, I think, because our feelings, when we change them, they change our destiny. So we need to pay attention to the feelings we're choosing to have. And again, just like I've been saying, it's not that we don't feel anguish like today. Right, when we think of Tumblr Ridge, it's not that we don't feel sadness, it's not that we don't feel grief, but we have to find ways to feel those and move through them.
Of course. I'd love to read one of your poems for our audience, simply titled Love is Medicine. Trust in the joy, trust in the bounty, trust in the beauty, trust in the glory, trust in the unfolding, and remember that you are here to experience love is medicine. Mm-hmm. Love is medicine. What a gorgeous, and it's so true. It's so powerful. What inspired you to write this, that poem? How did that come to you?
To be honest, I don't remember, to be honest. And this often is what happens to me when I'm writing is that it's like things come through, right?
You also say that every act of kindness is also an act of prayer and light and love. And mm-hmm. I think about the story of Kelly in the book and how she came to your rescue, helping you face your alcoholism. What was it about Kelly that helped you begin your journey towards sobriety? What was it about her mm-hmm. that made it work?
This was my same from Kelly that I traveled to Grand Cayman and the Dominican Republic with and met Isidro Camacho. It was her love for me, you know, as a friend to say, like, how you're living your life scares me and I'm worried about you.
Yeah.
And I know there have been other friends in my life who saw all that and didn't have the courage to say anything. But she did, and it changed everything for me, you know?
Yeah.
April will be 35 years of sobriety, and I know, Judy, had I not made that decision, I would not be alive today. I know that without a question at all.
Wow. Yeah. And look at the light that you're bringing into the world, all that light that's helping so many people. And you wouldn't have been able to do that had you not, you know, really found your own light and mm-hmm. your own care. And I think also what was so important about your treatment is at the time that you found roots, which kept you grounded. And you ask in the reflection, and I want to ask the listeners to think about this, what keeps you grounded and rooted? Don't answer that just yet. We're going to go on a short commercial break. When we come back, we'll talk more with Monique Gray Smith about what keeps her grounded. Be right back in a moment.
Finding Your Bliss is brought to you by CREATE, Canada's leading fertility center for over 25 years.
CREATE is here for anyone struggling with infertility or in need of assisted reproductive technology to have children. CREATE is about cutting-edge science from highly skilled doctors. In unprecedented times like these, CREATE is about ensuring the safety of all patients and staff. CREATE has made important changes to protect you by ensuring social distancing, wearing masks, as well as screening before entering. So what about the bundle of joy that you've been hoping would come into your family? CREATE Fertility Center is here for you. Visit createivf.com to keep up with the latest changes and learn about CREATE Fertility Center's comprehensive care for every fertility journey. Keep safe and healthy during these challenging days, remembering that life is about moments that we create together.
Hi, everyone. We're back, and this is Finding Your Bliss on Zoomer Radio, AM 740, FM 96.7. And I'm talking to Monique Gray Smith, author of Sharing the Light, Stories and Reflections. And just before the break, I asked you, Monique, what keeps you grounded and rooted?
My family, for one. And I live just a block from this beautiful forest called Pecols. And that's where I go in every day, in English known as Mount Doug Park, almost every single day, and walk in the forest or I work in my yard. Those are things that help to keep me grounded in huge ways. My practices of gratitude in the morning before my feet hit the floor and at night when I crawl into bed. Yes. Those are things for sure that keep me grounded.
Nature is a huge part of this, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. It totally is, Judy. One of my greatest gifts was the gift to adapt Dr. Robin Wall Kimmerer's book, Braiding Sweetgrass, that I'm sure many of your viewers and listeners will either have seen or read. It's been on the New York Times bestseller list for almost 300 weeks. And
I
was asked to write to do the adaptation for young people. So it's called Braiding Sweetgrass for Young Adults. And when I was working on that, I was reminded so much of my childhood, of how both of my parents raised my sister and I about being outside on the land, caring for the land, respecting the land, being a caretaker and a steward, how important it is. And it is a form of reciprocity, right? When I'm outside caring for the land, I get replenished, just as you said, in such bountiful and beautiful ways.
Yes, incredible. On this show, we all have had grandmothers that were very meaningful to us. My late grandma Lily, my daughter's named after her. She was the one who helped me when my parents got divorced when I was 3 years old. And it was unheard of. And I'm a lot older than you. In my day, no one was divorced. And Lily, Grandma Lily, was the savior. And you have a book called Tilly, A Story of Hope and Resilience. And you say the character of Grandma Tilly is a culmination of your own grandmothers, especially your grandmother on your dad's side.
Mm-hmm.
How did she teach you how to fill a room with love?
My grandma, her name was Beatrice. And she would just giggle. She was a joy. And so she taught me and all my cousins, I have so many cousins on that side, about loving people about being a lover. Yes. And I don't mean like in that physical way, but being a lover of humans, yes, of animals. So she was a beacon of love for sure and has influenced that character immensely.
Oh, incredible.
Yeah.
I also love your acronym for love. Everyone really listen to this. So love, L-O-V-E, let others voluntarily evolve. Mm-hmm. Brilliant. Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. Wow. Never heard of that before. It's really incredible. What did you mean when you wrote that?
I think that's a form of discipline for us, right? Because sometimes, I know even for me, sometimes I want to change people, right? To kind of fit more how it might work gentler for me.
Yeah.
Or I want to help them on their healing journey, but it's not my healing journey and it's not my character. Do you know what I mean by inside? So when we just let them voluntarily evolve, beauty happens, and not on my schedule. Right? That's the ego again. So I got to get my ego out of the way and just love them and let them voluntarily evolve.
Yes, absolutely. There's a beautiful story about your parents' separation, how they were separated for 10 years and didn't speak. I relate to this a lot. But it was your twins, your children, that brought them together, and then your sister's child later that brought them together. And I love the story about that beautiful car ride where you were all together, your immediate family, for your first time in 30 years together as a family. And there was something so sacred about that. Can you speak to the love that was so great through your children that it even melted the hearts of your parents' separation and it softened them? And ultimately, they did become closer. And even when your parents died, they were buried near each other, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Amazing.
And you know, I was 34 when my twins were born. And when I talked to my mom that afternoon, she came that night from Camels. When I talked to her on the phone that afternoon, that was the very first time she said, I love you. Because of the home she was raised in and the childhood she had, that was not anything that happened in their house. Wow. And so that was the first gift, right, that children bring is a parent's ability to express the love that's in their heart.
Yes.
And then on that trip, you know, the four of us again in that car, initially it was very weird, Judy. It was quite awkward. Yeah. Then it softened and I thought, wow, like what a gift my twins, Sadie and Jackson, and my niece, Brianna, have gifted us. The courage of my parents after years of hatred, that was the word, right? To begin to soften and be able to find a way back to each other, way back to a family because of the love for their grandchildren. I just think that's so beautiful, right? It's so beautiful. I'm going to say when my dad died, he asked to be placed up on the mountain in Kamloops. And so my sister and her husband found this beautiful place to lay him to rest. And we did. And then when my mom was, you know, not well and we were having to make some decisions, that's where she asked to be laid to rest, was beside my dad up on the mountain. And I just thought, Judy, you know,
my God.
They were each other's people, but they didn't have the skills. They didn't know how to communicate. They didn't know how to get through the really hard, hard times that they faced and that we faced as a family. Those times drew them apart instead of finding a way to bring them together. But yet there was my mom's, that was one of her last requests, was to be placed beside him on the mountain.
How did that land for you? That must have landed in such a deep place, like such a comforting, deep place for you.
It still chokes me up, you know, because there's a part of me that wishes still as the child, even though I'm not by any means a biologically aged child anymore, but still as their child, wishing that they'd had more tools or wishing that somebody had been able to guide them, you know, that maybe they would have had more happiness and joy, especially my dad would have had more happiness and joy in his life for sure. And again, that's not my journey, right? That was their journeys.
Yeah.
So I love that they're up there together. Yeah. I really do.
Wow. That's pretty amazing. That's pretty incredible. You know, the other thing that attracted me to your book was the sections on joy in your book, because it's so similar to the word I use, which is bliss. And it was very meaningful to me. And especially how brilliant you describe the fact that joy comes in waves. It's not like a tsunami in one big fell swoop. It's little waves. It's the joy when you found the coins at the bottom of the dryer and the laundromat and all of that kind of stuff. And it's up to us to notice the joy, you write, to find the hope that the light of joy gives us, to pay attention to it. Big, big underline under pay attention to it. Notice it and let that feeling in. Mm-hmm. How do we do that?
I do think it's a skill to cultivate, right?
Yes.
I mean, my parents raised my sister and I, especially when we were younger, outside on the land so much, to be paying attention, right?
Yes.
But when I was in nursing school, it was also something we learned to pay attention, especially in psych nursing, right? To be paying attention to all the subtle nuances.
Yes.
But I think it's a practice for us to begin to pay attention, to notice those moments of beauty, or as we were starting, the glimmers, as you said, or the blisses, like the hummingbird that comes. That's why I love that House of Anansi did all the beautiful design work with the hummingbird, because to me, they're a symbolism of joy, right? They come in, they're so magnificent, and then they're gone. They don't stay around for an hour.
Yeah.
So I think that's part of our work as humans, is to cultivate the gift and the ability to pay attention to joy in our life.
And you also say this beautiful line in your book, I choose joy over despair. It's so important to just create an intention to choose joy over despair. And your dad reminded you that joy comes from paying attention to the small pleasures of life, like chocolate ice cream. And I remember how you gave him little sips of that chocolate ice cream, which did bring him joy. And I know he had regrets, but that was that was some bliss for him that you were able to provide for him. And to this day, you still enjoy it.
I still enjoy chocolate ice cream for sure. Yeah, that was the last thing he ate before he passed, was a little bit of chocolate ice cream.
Wow. And you were able to give that to him. Like, you were able to share that with him and do that for him. What are some of the small things you do to feel joy in your life?
Oh, well, one is I love to go to the movies. Going to the movies brings me both joy and happiness. Going for a walk in the forest brings me joy. Coming into my office in the morning and having the fireplace on and lighting all my little lights brings me joy. A quick phone call or text with my children always brings me joy.
Of course.
Last night I went for dinner with my niece brings me joy. I think that the more we pay attention, or for me, I'll just say this myself, the more I pay attention to joy, there's more joy to experience and to behold.
So true. Joy begets joy, right? Joy begets more and more joy. Absolutely. I also love the lesson from Maricela to not only choose joy, but to share joy. Mm-hmm. You don't just choose it for yourself. It's in this, right?
That's what she said. That's how joy works. We share joy and joy comes back to us. It's like that beautiful reciprocity, right? I think that's important for these five ways of being, is that when we put these ways of being out, we experience them more. And even in the darkness, we can still experience gratitude and love and joy and happiness and hope.
Absolutely. And hope is a huge part of the book. I have to just talk about, everybody, the poems and reflections in the book are wonderful. There's wonderful things like what fills your heart with happiness. Like, that just makes you want to get out your journal and write. I was so thrilled when I heard about the book, My Heart Fills with Happiness. And then my cup runneth over, literally, when one of our producers, Lori, shared a beautiful picture of her beautiful five-year-old son reading the book, My Heart Fills with Happiness. And you wrote that book to support the wellness of Indigenous children and families, to encourage young children to reflect on what makes them happy. Can you tell us more about that wonderful moment in the book and your advice for people to pay attention, and that beautiful scene between grandmother and grandchild?
I was doing some trauma training for a beautiful Head Start. Those are our cultural preschools in Mission called Future Four Nations, with the parents and the staff. And then at lunchtime, the children joined us. And if you've ever been in a room where 33 or 4-year-olds come in, you know the whole energy just gets wild. But there was one little guy who stood by the door. His temperament was a little more cautious, and he was looking around for his person. Then he saw his cookum, grandma in my language, and he ran over to her, and she took his face in her hands, and she looked at him with so much love. His whole body changed. And what I saw was his heart filled with happiness by how she looked at him. For sure, she was a cookie person for him, no question. And I think he was a cookie person for her. And so it got me thinking about what fills my heart with happiness, right? And that book came out in 2016. It continues to be a hot commodity. And I just think about for me always what and who and where fills my heart with happiness. And if I'm not doing or being in those ways, no wonder I'm having a down day, right? Like, we have to be intentional about cultivating the feelings we want to have. And some days we need to have a down day, right?
Yes. Yes.
But the more we know about what fills our hearts with happiness, and the more children know, and the more we listen to what fills their hearts, the more we can cultivate those experiences. And it's really interesting, Judy. I have been all across this country and in the U.S. reading that book to children. And I could probably count on a handful how many children have said a thing that fills their heart with happiness, like an Xbox or something. Children will say, my bike, but when I ride with my dad. Or my skateboard and my brother teaching me, right? Or you know, whatever it is, it's in relation to somebody they love. And I think that's the beautiful thing about happiness, is what fills our hearts are our relationships.
Of course, of course. I also love that you have such a great, I've never heard anybody say this, how important it is the next time someone asks you, how are you? What do most people say? I'm okay, all good. How are you? Good, okay, surviving, all these crazy words. But you say, the next time someone asks you, how are you, to simply respond, happy. Wow. That's the best, because that just elevates and lifts and does such a great thing. I want to just talk briefly about hope. Hope is believing that tomorrow will be better than today, and having the self-determination you write to make it so. You also say hope is a muscle you need to exercise. Hope is so important. What else do you believe to be true about hope, and how can we have it? Because I think it's one of the most important parts of your book when you talk about hope. Hope's everything. Mm.
Hope is everything. And there's days, you know, where hope is like in the cuticle of my pinky toe, but we have to have hope. Otherwise, we're defeated before we even begin. Yes. And it is a muscle we have to cultivate. And it's not one that society really invites us to cultivate, because in our desperation, we are in scarcity mode. And in scarcity mode, we buy more. That's an important thing to remember. When I'm feeling hopeful and positive and full of love, I'm not needing to fill my closet with things. I'm not in scarcity mode, because I feel a sense of belonging. And when I don't have hope, I'm wanting belongings. And I think what we're really craving is a sense of belonging. So the more places we can cultivate that, the more hope we will have.
I have to share this story. So I love the reflection in the book. Find something that fosters hope, a photo, image, or object that reflects a dream or a possibility, and put it somewhere where you'll see it every day, like on your fridge, whatever. And why it's so important to always search for a glimmer of hope and light in the darkness. And you tell this beautiful story in your dream about being stuck on this ship, and how that glimmer of hope, that little sliver of light, that glimmer of hope is what saved you. It's so powerful, guys. You have to read the book. I'm not going to tell you more about that story, because you got to read the book, Sharing the Light. But it was very, very powerful that you looked at that glimmer and you went for it, and you suddenly got all of this strength and courage and energy, and you were able to just go and get that door open. And how can we make that work in our everyday lives and find and look for that glimmer of hope and then use it to catapult us to where we need to be?
I think sometimes it's our cookie people, right? Sometimes in our darkness, we need somebody to be beacons of hope for us, that we reach out and say, I need some help. Like my friend Kelly, right? Yeah. Monjazeb, when I reached out for help. When we have places we go, like when I walk in the forest, I come back more hopeful. When I work in my yard, I come in more hopeful, right? When we play with a dog, or we play with a cat, or we play with children, we are more hopeful just because of what happens to us neurobiologically. So we have to not just cultivate the muscle of hope, but cultivate experiences that foster hope within us. Sometimes it's watching a movie, it's listening to music, it's listening to a podcast, like all the beautiful work you put into the world, Judy.
Thank you. Thank you. You also talk about rest, which is so important, because we all forget in this treadmill that we're all on. Knowing when to rest. Sometimes we have, you write, to stop and rest, and then hope and light can nourish us. Isn't it also a belief that trusting the universe and knowing, praying, and hoping for a positive outcome also helps us? But we have to know when to stop.
Yes.
Right? And regroup and revitalize.
Otherwise, our body will stop for us, right?
Otherwise, you write about There's so many beautiful things in here. I could go on and on, but how we can become more like stars in the sky. That I want you guys to read about because it's just so powerful. But you also write about each of us being the light, receiving the light, and sharing the light. What is the best way to get started being the light?
I think with gratitude.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. First thing in the morning, those three things. And at night, at least three things. Or writing a journal. Or sending those messages to the cookie people. Like, just begin to cultivate that energy of gratitude. Yes.
I think you've probably answered this already, but there's a question we ask everyone at the end of the show. Of course, I'm going to ask it to you. What is bliss for Monique Gray Smith?
A family dinner with the four of us around the table. And an extension to that is a family dinner with the six of us, with my children and their partners around the table.
Wow. That's so fun. You know what's so interesting, Monique? I think a lot of people would have that kind of an answer. It's not, you know, it's not winning the Oscar. It's not winning the whatever, the Governor General's or it's really that. Isn't it interesting when it comes down to it? That's what it is.
It makes me teary, right? Like the awe of just those, what we might think is small moments, but the moments that just fill us up to get through the difficult times.
That's exactly what my answer would be, is to be with my children and my little baby grandchildren. Mm-hmm. Honestly, that is so it, what you said. It just went right to my heart because that's exactly it. For any young or older people out there in our Zoomer audience, how we say from 10 to 100, you've written 12 books. That's pretty incredible. Any advice for someone who wants to write an adult book or a children's book or just anything? Any advice for how they can do it?
I think it's just as simple as get your butt in the chair.
Yes.
Right? Like you have to start somewhere.
How did you feel when you wrote that first one?
I had had a near-death experience and I wrote a self-published book because I knew that if I didn't listen to, remember I said I had messages for 20 years. I knew if I didn't listen to that message, I might not get another chance. So I just did a self-published book and I knew nothing about the publishing industry. I just knew I had to listen to that message, Judy. And then it got picked up by Sonenis and became Tilly, A Story of Hope and Resilience. Wow. So it was out of desperation a little bit that I wrote, you know, and out of a calling. Like we have our intuition, right? And when our intuition keeps saying, write a book, don't ask, well, who am I to write a book? Because that's what I asked for 20 years. When you change the question to what would I write about, you'll get the answer.
So great. That's so great. Thank you for really being a light in this world. And I have to tell you for bringing me bliss for this last hour and all of our listeners. It's really been an absolute honor to have you here, Monique, truly.
Thank you. The honor is reciprocal. Thank you.
Thank you. What is the best way for people to contact you, connect with you on social media, and of course, to get a copy of Sharing the Light and all of your other books?
Your local bookstore is the best place. And if they don't have a copy, they can order a copy. If you need to, you can order online as well. My website, under my name, Monique Gray Smith. That's also on Instagram, I'm Monique Gray Smith. On Facebook, I'm Monique Gray Smith. On LinkedIn, I'm Monique Gray Smith. So just keeping it simple.
It's wonderful. Mm. Just absolutely wonderful. I want to thank you so much for being here today. Really, it's been absolutely delightful. Each week we spotlight a fabulous person like Monique Gray Smith, who's living their bliss. So if you're an author, artist, yoga, meditation, or mindfulness expert, or really anyone who has found and is following their bliss, we'd love to hear from you. And also, what did you love about today's show? That's easy. Are there any guests or topics you'd like us to feature on Finding Your Bliss? Just write to us. And for those of you who don't know, I'm also the Bliss Coach. That means I help you gain clarity and find your passion and purpose. Reach out to me at findingyourbliss.com/coaching. I'm also on Insight Timer, the number one free meditation app. We did a little bit of breath work before this show. All you have to do is search up Judy Lee Brack. And of course, you can always follow us at The Bliss Minute on Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook. I would love to thank our wonderful guest, Monique Gray Smith, for being on the show today. Also, thank you to Mag Ruffman, Siobhan Kiley, Chelsea Lockstead, Associate Producer Lori Quinn, Eva Shabbatai, Olivia Vigiani, Audio Engineer Juliana Yanuziello, Senior Editor Lauren Kaminsky, Video Editor Sierra Brown Rodriguez, Audio Producer Faz Kazi, and everyone here at Zoomer. And of course, a big thank you to our sponsor, the Create Fertility Center. And as well, thank you to Garrett Flores for the beautiful pink roses that adorn our set each week. For everyone here, I'm Judy Liebrack, reminding you all to take one step closer to finding your bliss.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.